got a hook on it, like a scorpion's got a hook. So watch out. Now, to follow along, here's what you need. You need this handout about women in Greek city-states. This is from Euripides' play, Medea. Okay. You need this handout, which talks about the horrors of war. We've just been through the Peloponnesian War, right? From women in Troy. And we also need Pericles' funeral oration. Now, this is how the rest of the week is going to go. This is all by way of setting up the rest of the week. Because not only are we dealing with these questions, the whole lesson's headed there. Okay? The whole lesson today is headed there. But we're also, and it's kind of interesting that we're doing this during a primary election day coming up tomorrow, but we're also asking the question whether democracy is doomed. All right? Because what you're going to find out on Thursday is that there was a philosopher who addressed it with one of the most famous stories ever written. In fact, it's arguably the most famous cave story ever written. All right? By the way, who was Plato's teacher?
Socrates.
Bingo. All right? Now, there are a couple of things that Socrates said that you have to keep clearly in mind as we go through this. One is the whole purpose of education boils down to two words. Know thyself. That's what he thought. Know thyself. It's the whole point. Second, he also said, you might want to write this down because this is a quote that might come in handy for the rest of your life. I'm not talking about a unit test or some sort of nonsense like that. All right? I'm talking about living. The unexamined life is not worth living. That's attributed to Socrates as well. The unexamined life is not worth living.
Who was that again?
Socrates. And so we shall see. Now, we're going to make a sandwich of this. I'm going to start with Euripides. Then I'm going to go to Thucydides' account of Pericles' funeral oration, which apparently happened just as the Peloponnesian War was starting. The first battle dead had come in for burial. And Pericles has to make a speech because Athenian law requires a ceremony to honor those who have died in warfare. And he mentions that, and then he makes a speech. I'm going to read sections of it, and you need to pay close attention. Then we're going to go back to another piece by Euripides, part of his Women of Troy. And there are several characters that come into play. And then we're going to address this question. Okay? We'll get to these, and we'll see what you think of this little figure of speech. Okay? Tomorrow, we choose up sides for the Athens-Sparta debate. Wednesday, we do it. Thursday, we do the cave story. It's from Plato's Republic. You'll see a handout which talks about it. So by Thursday, you need to read that. And you also need to have read the stuff leading up to Alexander the Great. And here's why. Plato was Socrates' student. Guess what philosopher was Plato's student? Give me a famous Greek philosopher. Somebody else. Starts with an A.
Aristotle.
Okay. And as long as we're sticking with the letter A, who was Aristotle's most famous student? Another famous figure, we're going up to him. Name starts with an A. He lived only 33 years. Died young. Greatest conqueror ever to come out of the Greek-speaking world. Somebody has it. I heard a whisper over there.
No.
No, not Alcibiades, not that twit. He failed, remember? God bless you. This guy succeeded, at least momentarily. You need to find out. No, it's not Aristophanes. You need to find out. You'll know, if you look through the syllabus, you'll know where we're headed. Okay? So, you need to be attentive. Okay, we're going to start with Euripides, all right? this thing about women in Greek city-states. Now, remember I told you, reminded you a while about the old Greek story about Jason and the Golden Fleece? Remember that? Jason sails eastward out of Greece across the Black Sea to a place called Colchis, which is now modern Georgia, steals a great fleet, the Golden Fleece, from the king there with the connivance of the king's daughter, Medea, who runs away to with Jason back to Greece, and they live happily ever after.
Wait, so was it Alexander Roy?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
You got it. Yeah. Oh, good, good, good. We're clear on that. All right. So, anyway, this is after Jason and Medea have run back to Greece. And she's talking about life with Jason and stuff like that. Now, remember this. Jason was an adventurer. Did he stay faithful to Medea? Had they children? Yes, they did. When Medea found out that Jason was fooling around, what did she do? She killed the children. All right. So this is horrible, terrible stuff. But we'll see what indeed Euripides is talking about, and here it goes. And you can follow along. Of all things which are living and can form a judgment, we women are the most unfortunate creatures. Firstly, with an excess of wealth, it is required for us to buy a husband and take for our bodies a master. For not to take one is even worse. And now the question is serious whether we take a good or bad one. For there is no easy escape for a woman, nor can she say no to her marriage. She arrives among new modes of behavior and manners and needs prophetic power, unless she has learnt at home how best to manage him who shares her life with her. And if we work out all this well and carefully, and the husband lives with us and lightly bears his yoke, then life is enviable. If not, I'd rather die. A man, when he's tired of the company in his home, goes out of the house and puts an end to his boredom and turns to a friend or companion of his own age. What's she talking about there? That's right. He goes, or an affair. A man, when he's tired of the company in his home, goes out of the house and puts an end to his boredom and turns to a friend or companion of his own age. But we are forced to keep our eyes on one alone. And who's that one?
The husband.
That's right. Guy goes out and cheats, he's a stud. Woman cheats, what is she?
Whore.
That's right. There you go. What they say of us is that we have a peaceful time living at home while they do the fighting in war. This was written during the Peloponnesian War, understand? Got it? So I'll repeat it. What they say of us is that we have a peaceful time living at home while they do the fighting in war. How wrong they are. I would very much rather stand three times in the front of battle than bear one child. So the play's about Jason and Medea. Or is it, really? What's Euripides writing about? What's he writing about?
He's displaying his own beliefs.
About what?
About Greek society.
With whose society in particular in Greece? Where's he from? He's from Athens. This is Athens. Peloponnesian wartime. This is Athens. See how it connects to that question? All right. Now, let's do Pericles, okay? You can decide for your... You see, what we have to decide here is whether Euripides, and I think you've got Euripides' attitude down pretty well, is he under the bottom, and is Pericles going to be over the top? You ready? Pericles' funeral oration. I'm not going to do the introduction, because basically all he says is that when the war dead come in, Athenian law obliges him to speak on their behalf. And so he begins, "However, since our ancestors have set the seal of their approval upon the practice, I must obey, and to the utmost of my power shall endeavor to satisfy the wishes and beliefs of all who hear me. I will speak first of our ancestors, for it is right and seemly that now, when we are lamenting the dead, a tribute should be paid to their memory. There has never been a time when they did not inhabit this land, which by their valor they will have handed down from generation to generation, and we have received from them a free state. But if they were worthy of praise, still more were our fathers, who added to their inheritance, and after many a struggle, transmitted to us, their sons, this great empire. And we ourselves assembled here today, who are still, most of us, in the vigor of life, have carried the work of improvement further, and have richly endowed our city with all things, so that she is sufficient for herself both in peace and war. Notice the gender he calls the city. What gender is the city?
Female.
Female. Why? Who's Athens named after?
Female.
Got it? Okay. Of the military exploits by which our various possessions were acquired, or of the energy with which we, our fathers, drove back the tide of war, Hellenic, that means Greek. Remember the Greek word for Greece. Hellenic or barbarian, I will not speak, for the tale would be long and is familiar to you. But before I praise the dead, I should like to point out by what principles of action we rose to power and under what institutions and through what manner of life our empire became great. For I conceive that such thoughts are not unsuited to the occasion, and that this numerous assembly of citizens and strangers may profitably listen to them. Our form of government does not enter into rivalry with the institution of others. Our government doesn't copy our neighbors, but is an example to them. It is true that we are called a democracy, for the administration is in the hands of the many and not of a few. But while there exists equal justice to all and alike in their private disputes, the claim of excellence is also recognized. And when a citizen is in any way distinguished, he is preferred to the public service not as a matter of privilege, but as the reward of merit. Neither is poverty an obstacle, but a man may benefit his country, whatever the obscurity of his condition. It goes on in that vein. There's no exclusiveness in our public life and in our private business. We are not suspicious of one another, unlike whom? What other people? They're up there. We are not suspicious of one another, nor angry with our neighbor if he does what he likes. We do not put on sour looks at him, which, though harmless, are not pleasant. While we are thus unconstrained in our private business, that means unbound, a spirit of reverence pervades our public acts. We are prevented from doing wrong by respect for the authorities and for the laws, having a particular regard to those which are ordained for the protection of the injured, as well as those unwritten laws which bring upon the transgressor of them the reprobation, that means disapproval, of the general sentiment. Also, we have not forgotten to provide for our weary spirits many relaxations from toil. We have regular games and sacrifices throughout the year. Our homes are beautiful and elegant, unlike whose. Got it. And the delight with which we daily feel in all these things helps us to banish sorrow. Because of the greatness of our city, the fruits of the whole earth flow in upon us, so that we enjoy the goods of other countries as freely as our own. Then again, our military training is in many respects superior to that of our adversaries. Our city is thrown open to the world, though, and we never expel a foreigner and prevent him from seeing or learning anything of which the secret, if revealed to an enemy, might profit him. We rely not upon management or trickery, but upon our own hearts and hands. And in the matter of education, whereas they from early youth are always undergoing laborious exercises which are to make them brave, and who are they? You got it. We live at ease, and yet are equally ready to face the perils which they face. And here's the proof. The Lacedaemonians, that's just the long word for Spartans, the Lacedaemonians come into Athenian territory not by themselves, but with their whole confederacy following. If anybody's got to follow us, they've got to bring their friends. With their whole confederacy following. We go alone into a neighbor's country, and although our opponents are fighting for their homes, and we on a foreign soil, we have seldom any difficulty in overcoming them. Our enemies have never yet felt our united strength. The care of a navy divides our attention, and on land we are obliged to send our own citizens everywhere. But they, if they meet and defeat a part of our army, are as proud as if they had routed us all, and when defeated, they pretend to have been vanquished by us all. If then we prefer to meet danger with a light heart but without laborious training, and with a courage which is gained by habit and not enforced by law, are we not greatly the better for it? Since we do not anticipate the pain, although when the hour comes we can be as brave as those who never allow themselves to rest, guess who? Thus our city is equally admirable in peace and in war. For we are lovers of the beautiful in our tastes, and our strength lies, in our opinion, not in deliberation and discussion, but that knowledge which is gained by discussion preparatory to acting. For we have a peculiar power of thinking before we act, and of acting too, whereas other men are courageous from ignorance, but hesitate upon reflection. He goes on that way. To sum up, I say that Athens is the school of Hellas. Hellas is the Greek word for what?
Greece.
To sum up, I say that Athens is the school of Hellas, and that the individual Athenian in his own person seems to have the power of adapting himself to the most varied form of action with the utmost versatility and grace. This is no passing an idle word, but truth and fact. For in the hour of trial, Athens alone among her contemporaries is superior to the report of her. No enemy who comes against her is indignant at the reverses which he sustains at the hands of such a city. No subject complains that his masters are unworthy of him. I have dwelt upon the greatness of Athens because I want to show you that we are contending for a higher prize than those who enjoy none of these privileges, and to establish by manifest proof the merit of these men whom I am now commemorating. Their loftiest praise has already been spoken, for in magnifying the city I have magnified them, and men like them whose virtues made her glorious. And of how few Hellenes can it be said as of them that their deeds, when weighed in the balance, have been found equal to their fame. I believe that such a death as theirs has been the true measure of a man's worth. It may be the first revelation of his virtues, but it is at any rate their final seal. Then he talks about warfare. And when the moment came, they were minded to resist and suffer rather than to fly and save their lives. They ran away from the word of dishonor, but on the battlefield their feet stood fast, and in an instant, at the height of their fortune, they passed away from the scene, not of their fear, but of their glory. Such was the end of these men. They were worthy of Athens. Wherefore I do not now pity the parents of the dead who stand here. I would rather comfort them. You know that your dead have passed away amid manifold vicissitudes. Those are unpredictable events, vicissitudes. And that they may be deemed fortunate who have gained their utmost honor, whether an honorable death like theirs or an honorable sorrow like yours, and whose share of happiness has been so ordered that the term of their happiness is likewise the term of their life. I know how hard it is to make you feel this when the good fortune of others will too often remind you of the gladness which once lightened your hearts. For the love of honor alone is ever young, and not riches, as some say, but honor is the delight of men when they are old and useless. To those of you who are the sons and brothers of the departed, I see that the struggle to emulate them will be an arduous one. For all men praise the dead. However preeminent your virtue may be, I do not say even to approach them and avoid living their rivals and detractors, but when a man is out of the way, the honor and goodwill which he receives is unalloyed. And if I'm to speak of womanly virtues to those of you who will henceforth be widows, let me sum them up in one short admonition. To a woman not to show more weakness than is natural to her sex is a great glory, and not to be talked about for good or evil among men. I'll leave it at that. All right. That's Pericles on Athens. Now, women of Troy. Now, all these documents can figure into your debate. So, inspect them carefully between now and Wednesday, even as you prepare. All right, this is a bit from Euripides' Women of Troy. You need to ask yourself who he's really talking about. Okay? And this is the scene. It's the end of the Trojan Wars. The Greeks have won. Troy is in ruins. The Greeks are doing what they will to the population of Troy, the survivors, and in this particular case, what's happened to the men? They've been killed. What's happened? Oh, what's going to happen to the women and children? Sorry?
They're
going to
be like,
never mind. They're going to be made slaves. Not like made slaves. Made slaves. There's no like about it. All right? There's no simile. Just literal fact. Okay, now this was written in 415 BC after something that you have read about happened in the Peloponnesian War. Alright, this comes out right in the middle of the war. The characters you need to pay attention to: Hector, who was Troy's greatest warrior, now dead. Achilles killed him. And Achilles, in his turn, died. Andromache, who is Hector's wife. Talthybius, who's a Greek soldier. An ordinary Greek soldier has to deliver a horrible message to Andromache. And even though he's not in the scene, in the background there's Odysseus, who told Talthybius to give this message. This comes at Odysseus's order. You need to know this. Alright? So here's the point where I'm going to read the piece. Talthybius appears. He's approaching Andromache. And the stage direction reads like this, and then I'll do the dialogue back and forth. And I think you'll be able to sense who's speaking, particularly if you have the document before you, which would be a good thing. So you might want to pull it out so you can follow. And if you don't have it on you, share it with another. All right? Talbithius shows up. This is on top of the walls of Troy. The city's in ruins. The population's been defeated. The Greeks are victorious. And this is the stage direction. Enter Talthybius with soldiers. He is troubled and advances hesitatingly. Talthybius. Wife of the noblest man that was in Troy, or wife of Hector, do not hate me. Against my will I come to tell you, the people and the kings have all resolved. Andromache. What is it? Evil follows words like those. This child they order, oh, how can I say it? Now that he does not go with me to the same master, no man in Greece shall ever be his master. But leave him here, all that is left of Troy. I don't know how to tell you what his bad words can't make better. I feel you kind, but you have not good news. Your child must die. There, now you know the whole, bad as it is. Oh, I have heard an evil worse than a slave in her master's bed. It was Odysseus had his way. He spoke to all the Greeks. Oh, God, there is no measure to my pain. He said a hero's son must not grow up. God and his own sons, may that counsel fall. But from the towering wall of Troy be thrown. Now, let it be done. That's wiser. Don't cling so to him. Bear your pain the way a brave woman suffers. You have no strength. Don't look to any help. There's no help for you anywhere. Think. The city gone, your husband too. And you, a captive and alone, one woman, how can you do battle with us? For your own good, I would not have you try and draw hatred down on you and be shamed. Oh, hush. Never a curse upon the Greeks. If you say words that make the army angry, the child will have no burial, and without pity. Have you been introduced to a play called Antigone?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So what happens to Greek civilization if the dead are unburied?
They don't pass completely through on the road. They're kind of stuck.
The spirit wanders. That's right. Always uneasy. If you say words that make the army angry, the child will have no burial and without pity. Silence now. Bear your fate as best you can, so then you need not leave him dead without a grave, and you will find the Greeks more kind. Is Euripides talking about Troy? Or is he talking about something else? Is Troy simply his vehicle for talking about something else? Think back to what you learned last week. Think back. What is he talking about?
The Greeks.
When?
Trojan.
That's what the play says. Is that what he's really talking about? Or is the Trojan War and the Greeks back then simply a symbol for something else? Remember when the play was written and shown?
During the Poe.
Yes, you can.
Poe Trojan War?
Exactly. The timing is not coincidental, ladies and gentlemen. It is not coincidental at all. What's going on here? What's he talking about?
The Melian massacre.
Exactly. This isn't about Troy. This is about Milos. And who are the killers? Who are the killers? Come on, answer the question. Who are the killers? This is Milos. Who did the killing? No. Who? The Athenians. Okay. Think back to what Pericles said about Athens. All right. Think about what Euripides is saying about Athens. Think about who's right. Ask yourselves whether either or both of them have gone too far in whichever direction. All right. You got the idea. You know what Euripides is talking about. And he doesn't hold back, does he? He's the bluntest of the ancient Greek playwrights, by the way. That's why he didn't win prizes. Ticked off too many people. All right. He's the critic. Pericles is the head of state. Okay, you got the idea. We're going to see what your gut feeling is, and then we'll go from there. And you have to weigh whether Pericles is, a lot of this is going to be on your backs, whether Pericles has gone over the top, whether Euripides has gone under the bottom. So here we go. No explanations yet. You see now that we finally arrived here? Okay. Is this going on in this country now? Sure it is. It's going on right now. This election is about it. Right now, this very moment. What's the issue? You've got it. It's going on right now. Maybe 2,400 years later, but it's not that far after all. Isn't it strange? Okay, let's see what you think. We've got several choices. This one does. Yeah, we'll put this one in. So there are five choices. Okay? One vote is, it's solidly a strength when a civilization does it. No doubt about it. It's a sign of strength. Choice two, no doubt about it. It's a sign of weakness. Choice number three, risky but worth it. Choice four. Risky and not worth it. Choice five. God knows. It could blow any direction. Beyond our power to predict. Okay, just a vote. No explanations yet. We'll finish off with any explanations you want to offer. And this is all by way of setting you up for Thursday and getting you ready, right?
Yes.
Get it? So we have serious business we're transacting. Remember setting you up for Wednesday, because by Thursday we wrestle with the issue of whether democracy is doomed. So you see, we've got heavy-duty stuff to do this week. And we head towards Alexander the Great. Okay, vote. Who says, no doubt, it's a strength?
Well, it's kind of in the middle.
Okay, remember your four choices. No doubt strength, no doubt weakness, risky worth it, risky not worth it, and who knows? It's too unpredictable. Got it?
Yes.
All right, doubtless strength. No doubt about it. Nobody. Doubtless weakness. Okay.
Wait, it's a weakness.
It's a weakness? Okay. Now, there's a trick here. Now,
yeah.
What if the justification of war is built on falsehood?
Still a weakness.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. The reason why I wanted you aware of that trap, because it's there. That stinger is there.
Right.
Okay? Simply a fact of life. Have you ever gotten in Woodrow Wilson?
Yep.
Yes.
What do you know about him?
No idea, I don't know the name.
President of the United States, 1913 to 1921. You know what was going on in that span of time? No.
Something
bigger
than
that.
World War One.
All right, this is what... Wilson was a scholar. He was an historian. He was one-time president of the American Historical Association. This is true. Yeah, he was a history teacher. Only at Princeton. Taught history and political science, became president of Princeton, then governor of New Jersey, then president of the United States. He was an intellectual. Came originally from Virginia. Okay? Guy was a scholar. This is what he said about warfare. You know what a casualty is? You know what a casualty is? What's a casualty, Stephen?
A death.
A death, or somebody who's dead or wounded in warfare. This is what Wilson said as this country entered World War I. The first casualty of war is truth. That's why I bring it up, because I don't want you snagged by that problem.
Right.
You can stay where you can stand your ground, you know, by all means do so, but know that that problem is there. Okay, risky but worth it. Self-criticism in time of war for a civilization or a country.
Risky but worth it.
What does that mean?
It means it could blow up in your face, but it's worth it to try. It may actually be a strength, although there's no guarantee it is. But it's worth taking the risk.
Yeah.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Okay. Because it's risky, even though it could be a sign of strength, it's not worth taking the risk. Who says that? Okay. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11 of you in here. Nine have voted. Who says? God knows. This is crazy. Or then you're in that camp. All right. Evidently, there are two of you left who are in that camp. All right. My friends, you got something to figure out this week. Do you understand? Do you think this affects us now?
Yes.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. You know? And this is part of the task you're going to have to carry as citizens if this country of ours be a democracy. All right? In just a few years, that one's on your back. Get ready. It will come. It will come. Pack the light.
We get a vote like the first year, right?
Pardon?
We get a vote the first year.
Well, let me see. 2012, you'll be eligible to vote.
Yeah.
If you turn 18 in 2012, you'll be eligible to vote. That's right. It's coming. Not this time, but next time. Okay. Any comments you want to make as to why you voted the way you did?
It's almost a mini defeat. That's why I said I'm reading this.
No, it isn't.
Why? All right. Say more. Why is it? How is it admitting defeat? How is it not? First, Brandon, then Rachel, then we go.
It's a mental thing. Like, if you guys start criticizing yourself during a war, everyone will start getting it.
Well, no, it isn't, because like if you start criticizing yourself, you realize mistakes that you might be able to correct.
Yeah, but what if you don't change it?
Yeah,
what if you
know
can't change it?
It's gonna be an if-if battle.
It
what
depends
if?
On how you're criticizing
yourself, though. Yeah, but you have to understand this. It's a good thing you said it's an if-if battle. You're right. But does it follow that we can dismiss it? Here's why I ask this. Do you think this is the first time this has come up in anybody's history?
No.
No, it isn't. The first existing anti-war poem was written by the sister of the person who united Mesopotamia for the first time. She was a high priestess in the ancient Mesopotamian religion. All right? That poem is 4,300 years old. 4,300 years old. Okay? So we've got a record that old going back and questioning self-criticism during time of war. Whether she was right or wrong is another question, but she did it. Okay? We have it with Euripides here. Right? Have we had it before in our own country's history? Let me tell you a little story, because his birthday's coming up. His birthday comes up in 8 days' time. There once was a man. Do you know how we got our hands on California, Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, Nevada, a sliver of most of Colorado? Pardon? Not the Spanish, but the country to our south. The Mexicans. Called the Mexican War. Okay? Among the people who criticized that war, there was Thoreau, who you'll read, but there was another guy. He was a member of Congress, and largely because of that, he had only one term in Congress before he later on became President of the United States. But he argued that the United States deliberately provoked a fight with Mexico so that the United States could take the northern half of that country. Because that's basically what we did. We creamed the Mexicans, and we took the northern half of Mexico. And the Mexicans, by the way, have never forgotten that. You know who that guy was? Very, very famous. He later became president. Abraham Lincoln.
That was a complete guess. Yes.
Abraham Lincoln. You've got things to think about this week. I'll see you tomorrow. We'll choose upside. This debate set up. Try to do as little of as possible.